This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation.
A new two-year session of the Pennsylvania General Assembly is about to begin, and lawmakers have to tackle a number of difficult policy issues and craft a new state budget against the backdrop of a looming fiscal deficit. Our Capital Watch crew is here to take a look at what lies ahead in 2025. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation.
Well, and welcome back to all of our listeners. Thanks for being with us. Looking forward to a new year of talking about the ongoing drama in your state government. And man, 2025 is stacked up to be, I think, a very challenging but very interesting year in Harrisburg.
Well, we're looking at a situation where the General Assembly is divided once again. The Republicans control the Senate chamber, Democrats control the House chamber, and we have a Democratic governor. The governor, Governor Shapiro, is talked a lot about getting things done in the past, claims to be really good at getting things done, has a lot of slogans to talk about getting things done. And the question is now on the table, is he going to be able to get anything done?
Absolutely. I think there are a lot of big things on the table. I know from a transportation perspective, there's been a lot of talk recently on putting a transportation funding solution together. I know Mass Transit, SEPTA down in the southeastern part of the state, has been asking for funding. And they were able to work out sort of a deal last year that gave some funding to SEPTA and some funding to roads and bridges across the state. But that's going to come to a head this year. And I think that's going to be up to the governor to figure out how a deal can be worked out that gets everybody a little bit of what they want there. So transportation funding, I think, is going to be a big issue.
And this is all the backdrop, of course, for Governor Shapiro going into his reelection bid in 2026. He got a big dose of the national spotlight last year in being considered for the vice presidential slot on the Democrat side. And certainly he has not been especially shy about his ambitions. And so going into a big reelection win, he hopes, in 26 would be a springboard for a 2028 bid for the White House.
And one of the arenas in which the governor has an opportunity to make a big splash and a big impression nationally is in the area of expanding school choice in Pennsylvania. The governor has talked positively about expanding school choice over the years. He's made some very specific references to certain legislation that has actually come to his desk since he's been governor, but he ended up vetoing. And those type of bills are going to be landing on his desk yet again here in 2025. So we're looking at, I think, very long and drawn out, I guess you would call, campaigns on both sides of the issue of expanding school choice. We have primarily the teachers union, the PSEA, and other public sector unions opposing any change to our educational system, despite many schools simply failing their children. And the folks who have formed a coalition around the idea that every child should have an opportunity for a great education in Pennsylvania, and they should be able to choose that regardless of whether their family has the means or where they happen to fall on the line of a zip code of a particular district.
Yes, and the choosing is actually the critical change that Pennsylvania needs, because only when you empower parents to move their kids out of a school that doesn't work to get them into a better school that will better serve their kid, their student, that's the only way to inject any kind of accountability into our very sclerotic system. Like, we need to have, in the same way that FedEx and UPS and DHL have made the U.S. Postal Service less bad, that having market competition to show people how things can be better, that's the only way to actually incentivize the established system to improve.
Well, and I wonder too how this conversation is going to be affected by what's going to happen at the national level, because there's conversations happening, you know, within the incoming Trump administration. We've heard get rid of the Department of Education, return funding to the states. So with those conversations is going to obviously come, you know, at the state level. How are we going to allocate those funds if they're going to return to the states? What policy choices are we going to make going forward, depending on what happens at the federal level?
And some of the legislation we'll see at the Pennsylvania level will be, again, the introduction of the Lifeline Scholarship Program.
Yep.
That's the one that actually reached the governor's desk a couple of times in the past 2 years. And this time, I hope and expect it's going to be on his desk again in an environment this time where he's going to feel compelled to sign it. He's talked positively about it. It's time for him to put his money where his mouth is in terms of actually getting school choice done in a significant way in Pennsylvania.
Until and unless we as citizens, we as taxpayers have an education system, because I mean the amount of money that the taxpayers commit to the education system is massive. We're one of the leading spenders in the nation, and yet sadly that system too often yields a decidedly mediocre result for our students and their families, that until and unless we get the full value out of the dollars that are being allocated so that our kids get the kind of challenging, rigorous, and meaningful educational experience that they need, we're never going to be able to right-size state government. We're never going to be able to right-size the tax burden. Like, we need the contribution of those young people by realizing the fullness of the potential that God gave them. And the only way that's going to happen is with an educational experience that challenges them and helps them to become their best selves.
And we see a lot of encouraging signs, because all over the country, more and more states are adopting more and more robust school choice measures. You're seeing multiple states that now have an educational savings account available, some universally in some of the states. You're seeing the expansion of all sorts of creative solutions that allow the marketplace to help define how to get a great education. And those trends are buzzing all around Pennsylvania, near us. West Virginia has a universal ESA on our border in the Southwest. And it's a matter of that momentum translating into Pennsylvania so we can compete again as a place where people want to raise their families. If economic policies are oppressive, if taxes are high, and if the education system is bad, parents are not going to want to stay in Pennsylvania with their families.
Right. One of the other big challenges that that Pennsylvania lawmakers and decision makers are going to face is the overall fiscal situation, because we were flush, you know, a year or two ago with, you know, Biden bucks from Washington, but with the amount of spending that was put forward in last year's budget, the Independent Fiscal Office reports that we're going to be essentially we will have spent all of our reserves and much of the rainy day fund by the end of this fiscal year. So, you know, what cushion we did have is going to be gone. And sadly, a lot of us were warning about that. But the politicians went ahead and did what they wanted anyway.
We could see it coming in large measure. And now the IFO, the Independent Fiscal Office, is saying that average spending growth significantly exceeds the average revenue growth by 1.2%. And the IFO specifically blamed that general fund deficit spending to policies pushed by Democratic Governor Josh Shapiro.
You know, one of the other really big challenges that is going to, I think, define 2025 and beyond is, and we've seen action on this in these recent days, that U.S. Steel is threatening to leave Pennsylvania, that they have an offer on the table for a merger with Nippon Steel from Japan, and that the partnership with Nippon offers a massive cash infusion for modernization of the facilities in the Monongahela Valley, state-of-the-art technology, and certainly a stronger fiscal position to back up U.S. Steel's pension and benefit obligations for its workers and its employees. The local United Steelworkers Union is for the deal, but the national president of their union is against it. And so, you know, this, and of course, President Trump is also not for the deal. So it's like all of the people who we needed to show real leadership, that none of them have done it. And that if the deal fails, if this rescue plan isn't approved, the CEO of U.S. Steel says he's going to move them out of Pennsylvania. And I don't think that is an idle threat. We've seen when the modernization plan the pre-COVID was thwarted by the Allegheny County Health Department sitting on a permit for 2 years and then turning it down, that investment that they were going to make in the Mon Valley instead went to Arkansas. And so if this rescue plan doesn't go through, it's it's going to be the beginning of the end, and that the amount of economic damage that's going to come from losing thousands of jobs and, you know, $1 billion or more in wages, multiple billions of dollars of value added year over year. Like, this is going to be catastrophic, and the unraveling is going to happen leading into the, you know, Shapiro reelection bid. I mean, the governor cannot want that, but, you know, can he help get the deal done? I don't know. We'll see.
And in fact, we do have a lot of opportunities to make a positive difference in 2025. We've talked a little bit about energy, and one of the things that we can do is make sure that Pennsylvania gets out of the REGI,
the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. Yes.
It's a carbon tax. It's a tax on energy. It makes energy more expensive and difficult for Pennsylvania consumers to have access to. That's one thing we can do. Easy, get Pennsylvania out of this interstate compact once and for all. Another thing we can do, we've talked about education, providing those education opportunities for parents and kids. But another arena is promoting work. Mm-hmm. In other words, re-incentivizing programs like Medicaid and other major social welfare programs to encourage work and reward work and not perpetuate folks getting permanently sucked into a public welfare system.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Steve, I'm going to just preempt all of the counter arguments, that you're a meanie and that, you know, people have obligations to care for, you know, small children and elderly relatives, or that they have disabilities, or that we're not talking about them. We're talking only about people who are receiving benefits, who are of working age, and who are capable of working. And the reason why is not because we're mean, it's because it's bad for people to just be idle, and that the longer that people are on the sofa and not either looking for a job, learning to be trained for a new job, or even just being up volunteering for some kind of charitable organization, the longer that you're inactive, the more your skills stagnate, the more your credentials get out of date, and the harder then it will be for you, that unemployed person, to eventually get a job.
We want the public safety, the public welfare safety net, to be a safety net. And that means we're not going to keep people there forever. It's just you get in a bad situation, of course we can help you. We can provide you with some resources.
Right.
But the idea is, if you're able, you can get back on your feet, and you'll be better off for it, as will your family.
Yes.
And studies
have
been done on this time after time. This is like a known thing.
Yes.
But there's this incentives are built into the system as it stands now that keep people trapped. So we want to face that.
I think the next step to that too is to really look at the job training programs we have and the federal workforce money that we get, and make sure that we're aligning those job training programs with workforce needs that our businesses have, so that we're creating sustainable jobs for those individuals and we're making careers instead of just jobs.
Right, right. And to make sure that those programs are imparting skills that are needed for jobs that exist in the economy rather than just being busy work.
Right.
Another area we've got to take a look at is more regulatory reform. That's critical. Other states are doing it, and Pennsylvania is not in a vacuum. If we don't do it, the capital that otherwise would be invested in Pennsylvania migrates to other states where they have less unnecessary regulation.
Right.
We need tax relief for businesses and households. That's kind of almost sounds like a no-brainer, but it's a tough one to get done. You're telling a big spending institution to instead of increasing the face amount of the taxes they're collecting to reduce that,
right.
They get a little panicky. So that's an important one that we've got to make sure is pushed hard and pushed skillfully through the legislature to the governor's desk, lowering corporate net income tax and other relevant taxes to make us competitive.
Yes, and to lower the rates, because rates and receipts are two different things. Having a lower, more competitive rate can encourage the growth so the economy expands, so that, yes, of course, there'll be a dip in revenues at first, but this is one of the ways, right-sizing the tax burden to optimize growth is one of the ways that you can expand the economy so over time that you get into that virtuous cycle where the growing economy is naturally just throwing off more tax revenues at low rates, and then that's what you use to fund government services.
Especially if it's accompanied by that regulatory and permitting reform, because that's almost a tax relief in and of itself,
too. Of course.
And one other arena that we can take a look at is improving our good government, in particular our elections and voting. We can pass voter identification laws that have been upheld across the country in other states. Pennsylvania actually did try to enact them back in the 2015 era, but the courts ended up blocking that or slowing it down and preventing it from ever being implemented. But voter identification is ripe, and what we're talking about is simply making sure that it's easy to vote and hard to cheat in our elections here in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you think about it, and as we go about our daily lives, how many different times are we asked to be able to identify ourselves, to cash a check, to to return a product at a store? I mean, like almost anything, any business transaction, certainly any other transaction with government, you have to, to board a plane. It's like you've got to be able to prove who you are. And it's completely insane that somehow that the our precious birthright of casting a vote as an American citizen should be the one thing that goes unprotected.
And the vast majority of people support that as well. So there's no excuse for it.
And when we look at these things and the things I've talked about in terms of what we can get done in 2025, they're things that winning campaign candidates ran on and won, that the governor has talked about positively, that the public overwhelmingly supports by via extensive public polling that we've done at Commonwealth Foundation, and that this agenda would be transformative for Pennsylvania families and businesses.
Well, God willing, here we go.
Yeah, well, I just want to come back to transportation funding once more because I think it's really important in this discussion because fuel taxes are one of the things that really do hold businesses back when they're especially high. And Pennsylvania has the third highest diesel tax in the nation. So we actually are the fifth most expensive state in the nation in which to drive a truck. So that affects all of everybody else's businesses because those costs obviously get to small businesses throughout the supply chain, throughout the state. So we're watching this transportation funding discussion, which is going to be coming up here soon, to make sure that trucks are treated fairly in that and to make sure that they're not unduly burdened by, all the sudden burdensome tax increases that are really going to affect them as well, which, like I said, trickle down through the whole economy. Yeah. So we want to make sure we stay competitive there, too, while maintaining our roads and bridges and making sure that they're sustainable. So watching that conversation and looking forward to that.
It's the circulatory system of our economy. We've got to take care of it, make sure it works right. Well, as we're coming down here to the final moments of our first show of the new year, want to say thanks again for being part of the team here. And Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and the things that you do?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
You can find us at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. From Steve, Rebecca, and me, thanks to all of you for listening. Happy New Year, and we'll catch you next time.
This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the community forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.